Radio Community Spotlight for January is the museum's education program. School is back in session, and so is the museum's free admission program for local schools. Public and private school students, grades 1 through 12, in the Washington, D.C. area, will receive free admission to the museum when they visit as a school group. For details, including a list of local cities and counties eligible for this program, visit federalnewsradio.com.
Newsmakers on the Dorbeck Insider.
Manish Chopra is the Obama administration's chief technology officer.
The ecosystem that's been born out of the open health data movement, I believe, is one of the shining lights.
Of course, it's great having somebody like Todd Park over there.
We've got chief technologies officers at the VA under Peter Levin and Jim Shelton, who runs innovation over at the Department of Education. All have demonstrated results in fostering these ecosystems to not only publish the data, but to do something meaningful with it.
Hear the entire interview online. FederalNewsRadio.com/Dorbeck Insider.
This is a paid commercial program and may not represent the views of Bonneville International Corporation or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions from this broadcast are solely those of the individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP, the federal leader in retirement planning seminars. Join NITP this morning for an hour of plain talk on planning your future. You've got questions, they've got answers.
Good morning and Happy New Year. And we're going to start the new year off right with For Your Benefit with Freddie Cook, and Freddie's going to talk about debt management. Good morning, Freddie.
Good morning. How are you today?
Everything's good, and soon to be better, this hour, anyway. Freddie's a CPA, personal financial specialist. His office is located in Bowie, Maryland, and although we broadcast outside the Beltway, for those of you all outside the Beltway, you want to give us a call? Give us a call. We're at 202-465-3080. And Tammy Flanagan, co-host of the show. Good morning, Tammy.
Good morning, Bob.
And Tammy's a senior benefit director of NITP, weekly GovExec columnist, and 2 days past her birthday.
That's right.
So happy birthday.
Older and wiser.
It'd be hard for you to get wiser.
Time. Thank you.
All righty, Freddie. Debt management. People do things at the end of the year looking forward to the current year and say, I'm going to have a New Year's resolution. Well, one of those might be, I bet more than one of those, probably many people say, I'm going to manage my debt. I'm going to get rid of it. How do you manage that? I guess one way is not to get into debt, but that's pretty hard.
Bob, you're absolutely right. It is very difficult not to get into debt. And I think one of the things that you run into, particularly around this time of the year, is holiday spending. Quite often, we want to do the things that that we consider right by people by providing gifts for the holidays. And sometimes we tend to overdo it. And when we overdo it, unfortunately, we find that at the beginning of the year is when we wind up having to pay for that overindulgence. Mm-hmm. And quite often what happens is that while we felt good and really had a wonderful time during the holidays, we find that now it's time to pay the piper. And unfortunately, what happens is that during the months of January and other months, we have to sort of pay for those overindulgences. Well, one of the things that we can do is look at whether or not those things that we actually purchased were absolutely necessary. You know, unfortunately, we find that we, and I don't want to use that analogy, but we buy toys for the kids for the holidays. And then, you know, during the month of January, we can't find or can't remember where those toys are or what they were, or they're broken. So what were they necessary? Maybe they're... Could have been other choices that could have been made.
So when one goes shopping, keep a budget in mind and an item in mind that would have lasting value rather than they tear the wrapping off the present.
Get a gift receipt. Because my husband, he's very famous for that. We'll buy him gifts for Christmas, and he'll be like, I already have a pair of jeans. I don't need a second pair of jeans. So usually the week after Christmas, I've trained him now to take his gifts back, rather than me having to buy them and take them back. But he's very good about being conservative with the gifts. And if he gets more than what he needs, he doesn't hesitate to return them. And I've learned not to get my feelings hurt.
Yeah.
Freddie, well, gift cards are good alternatives. and maybe even a savings bond.
Yeah,
maybe a contribution to a 529.
Yeah, gift card's probably a good way to manage your budget, because then you can have a certain budget for each person, and you don't have to worry about that sweater costing $50 instead of $20. You just give them a $20 gift card, and they can buy whatever they want.
That works out very well.
Yeah.
And also, it may not necessarily impact your budget as much, because if you're giving gift cards, you've pretty much set a spending limit on some of those things.
But what happens when you have done this and now you've got that credit card bill looming and you don't have the money at the end of the month to pay it? Should you pay down as much as you can, or pay the minimum balance, or cut down on your 401k plan to pay off the balance? What's the strategy for someone getting out of that mountain they've created after the holidays?
Well, hopefully what one should have done was set up a budget, sort of to identify what the proper spending amounts should have been. But let's say you set up the budget and you
blew it.
Overindulged and you blew the budget. Well, now there are a number of ways to get out of your situation. One of the things that I'd like to look at, or like to talk about, is developing a plan, because obviously to get out of debt, you really should plan for it.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that we can recommend sometimes is maybe looking at alternative ways, you know, maybe a part-time job. To generate more
increase
income.
Increase your income to pay it off.
To increase your income. Now, when we're looking at a plan, we have to understand that by not paying it off, it's going to have a tremendous impact.
Right.
So debt reduction has to be the alternative.
And those interest rates aren't low on credit card balances.
Oh, that's true.
Do you ever look at it in reverse with your clients and say, okay, your credit card is as low as 6% and as high as 18%. What that really means is that's an investment in the reverse side that's costing you 6 or 18%. So if you were to divert money, say, from a savings account, not necessarily 401k, but maybe, and you're really making 6 or 18% on the money because you're not spending it. It's kind of a screwy way to look at it, but the sooner you pay that debt down, the less that those interest rates are multiplying.
Yeah, it's a tough call to make, to decide between your retirement savings and your
current debt. Yeah, the retirement savings
debt.
Is a tough one. But
that's true. You're absolutely right. The retirement savings is definitely a tough one, because generally we have that goal to one of our main goals is to retire at a certain point. So we definitely want to maintain those monies in the savings accounts, particularly if the money is tax deferred. Because by pulling it out of a tax-deferred account, not only are you looking at paying off the debt, but you're also looking at incurring an additional tax liability. Because if you're under 59.5, as you well know, there's an additional 10% added to the taxes that you're going to pay on it. But if the money is sitting in a savings account earning, let's say, right now, that great rate that most banks are paying, that 0.1 or 0.2%, and you're paying, 12 to 18% on a credit card, it probably would be advisable to consider looking at paying off that credit card as an alternative to leaving it in the savings account. Now, there's always a situation regarding need. Are we going to need those funds in the near future? And if you're talking about maybe using your emergency funds, then that may not be such a great idea.
But if you have all your savings.
Right. But if you do have some bucks sitting around that are just earning, the 0.1%, 0.2%, paying off a credit card might be a great alternative.
And then do you recommend cutting up the credit card afterwards?
Well, it depends on whether or not you have a wallet full of credit cards. I mean, if you only have one or two, and I generally recommend keeping one or two as an emergency.
Absolutely.
For emergency purposes. But the goal really is to pay them off at the end of the month.
Right.
That's a bullseye. Clients come in and they go, I'm going to take an equity line out on the house, not that they're easy to get anymore, and I'm going to pay off all my credit cards. And if I know the client and we've worked together for a number of years, you can be frank, don't do it, because they're just going to take the equity line, bring the credit card balance down to zero, and then jack it back up. Now they got two loans.
Well, I see the same thing happening with the thrift savings plan, that people get themselves in that vicious cycle where they borrow from their TSP account to pay off their credit card debt, get the credit card debt paid off, and then, create a new account and then have to borrow again later on to pay that off. So that's defeating the purpose of trying to save for retirement, because it really does take a hit on your retirement savings when you borrow from it.
You're absolutely right. I think the key that we should get from this is discipline.
Right.
Because if you're going to move money from one debt source to another, then basically all you're doing is transferring the debt. And you're not really paying it down. You're just transferring it. So it doesn't really make much sense to do that.
I guess in whether it's dieting or dieting with money, we have to be more disciplined in the way we manage our lives.
That's exactly correct.
And does it then, maybe to put it in the grander scheme of things, ought to be a financial plan. We'll talk about that in a little bit. But a budget, just a simple budget. And this is probably a great time of year to be looking at, okay, what am I going to spend between now and the end of December that I have to spend? I mean, you got to eat, and you have to pay the rent or the mortgage, and you have to pay utilities. And
I know some of our listeners are probably just recent retirees, because there's always on December 31st a slew of retirees. So they're probably starting with a whole new budget aspect for their new life after retirement. So they're even more in tune with trying to figure out how to create a new spending habit for the new year.
But, yeah, and you work on the fixed, and then hopefully there's still some left after you got your fixed expenses, but you don't want to necessarily spend till what you bring home. And like Tammy says, that would help in looking forward. They probably should have done it before they retired, but definitely after they retired.
Well, the reality sits in now.
You know, whatever the age group is, sometimes the younger folks, when they get out of school, savings is about the last thing in mind. They want to enjoy things because they didn't maybe enjoy it as much when they were in school because they were paying for tuition, etc. But how does one start with a budget? I mean, everybody isn't so inclined. I'm not so sure everybody. Of course, everybody should go to an accountant and have a budget, but I'm kidding with that. there ought to be some help, either it's on the net or listening to shows, financial planning shows like this one. How does one start with a budget? We did a session at a seminar years ago. It was called Get Real About Retirement Dollars, but we started with the budget. In other words, where is your money going? So let's get real with where it's going, and do you have enough to cover that? So when you work with maybe somebody that wants to get out of debt, do you set them up and say, okay, let's see where you spend your money? And, you know, everybody beats on the $2 a cup coffee. Maybe everybody doesn't spend $2 a day on coffee. And it isn't that you can't ever go to the movies and it isn't that you can't ever go out, but how do you discipline people, Freddie?
Well, Bob, that's a very good question. And I think what happens to most people is that for some reason they feel that, you know, writing things down is really not for them. I think what they tend to think is that, well, I'm doing well, so I should be able to spend whatever I feel I should, you know, I can. Because I'm doing okay. I deserve this, you know. And quite often what they tend to do is by doing that, what you tend to do is you tend to lose the sense of where you are. But by writing it down, and really what you should do is start with, you know, what you have coming in on a given month. Not gross pay, but net pay.
Exactly.
Because as you know, we don't get the gross. We get the net. I mean, right. Uncle Sam and all of the other deductions are going to be taken out first.
So same thing in retirement, because your retirement check has taxes withheld and health insurance and other things. So you need to look at the take-home part of that check.
That's exactly right. And you start with that, and then you work down, because there are things that you're going to have to spend. You know, those fixed costs. You know, the mortgage, the insurances, the utilities, things that you can't live without. The food, clothing. Those things you can't live without. And then you look at the other items, the things that are not necessarily necessities, but the things that you want to do, the things that, you know, that feel good for you. And then when you get to that point, then you look at what's left, and hopefully there's something left.
Yeah, and I see the ads on it. Well, this is only $2 a week. This is only a dollar a day. Well,
it adds up.
You keep adding those things. Maybe we don't need them. Like Tammy said, the cable bill is always something more we can buy. Please, cable companies, don't get mad at this. But, you know, if you got the base coverage in a little bit, okay. Do you need all the other ones? Same thing, I suppose, with cell phones.
Right. Those are two big expenses that 10 years ago we probably didn't have the same type of bill coming in that we do now for telecommunications, and all the technology we enjoy today comes at a price.
And not only that, most of us have not only a cell phone bill, but we also have a landline.
Yeah. Do you need both?
Do you need both? That's correct.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of people today now giving up their landline, which is probably a savings. I guess for us it'd be a savings about $40-$50 a month.
Well, even if you don't give it up, do you need all of the bells and whistles that go along with it? I mean, can you just get away with the basic service?
That's true.
So, I mean, those are tough choices that one may be able to save quite a bit of dollars on over the long haul.
That's right.
You know, as an accountant, you'd get a kick out of this, Freddie. Tammy's probably heard this before. But if you spend a dollar, you have to make $1.50 or $1.75. In other words, to spend a dollar, you have to pay the taxes on it.
That's correct.
Payroll taxes, income taxes, state and local income taxes, then whatever else there might be in that paycheck. So you only can spend what's left. So if you do it in the reverse, that $2 you spend, I know this sounds like I'm an accountant, but I am. if I'm spending two, it's costing me $3 or $3.50 to do it. And
I think the other thing unusual this time of the year is that we normally look forward to January as the time we get our cost of living adjustment, our pay raise for the beginning of the year. Well, not happening this year. No pay raise, no cost of living adjustment. But there is one thing we have to look forward to.
That's the 2%.
Pay raise.
Sort of, but don't spend it.
Yeah, they're calling it the tax holiday for 2011. Yeah.
So let's put that in perspective. You're not going to pay tax on this. This is 2%.
We're talking about the reduction in the FICA tax, the Social Security payroll tax.
So if you're making, say, $50,000 a year, and again, you can multiply this or divide it by whatever number. Let's just pick a middle number. That's $1,000 a year, tax-free, if you will, that's coming. It's going to come in your paycheck. So what do you do with it? Debt reduction, certainly, I think, might be the primary target. And maybe if you haven't maximized the thrift, here's a way to put it in the thrift and get a tax deduction on top of that.
Right.
And have tax-deferred growth.
Yeah, for most employees, that's at least $100 a month extra in your take-home pay.
Those are both excellent ideas, particularly adding it to the thrift. If retirement is the goal, I mean, that would be a wonderful idea.
That's right.
Particularly for those who haven't already maxed out their TSP.
Yeah.
And, I mean, that's an excellent goal.
And especially the FERS folks. And then you get a match if you haven't hit the max yet. And you got 2 years of this. So it isn't just 2011.
Oh, it's 2012?
It's 2012
too?
As well.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I didn't know that. Mm-hmm.
Excellent.
And let's say you're making $100,000 a year. That's 2,000 times two. It's $4,000. Just put the best possible place you can to get the greatest rate of return. And really, you're not going to miss anything.
That's a great idea.
What's not to like?
Except the retirees won't get to enjoy that because they don't pay Social Security taxes on their retirement. So they'll have to get a second career.
That's a very sore subject with the retirees because in 2010, they got this mythical. It wasn't mythical. It was real. They got a tax credit because they were retired because people under Social Security got whatever. And they didn't get it this year.
No, this year it's not going to come.
So please don't call on that one. Financial plans. Financial plans, I think a lot of people say, they look at a financial plan like they almost do a budget, but a financial plan really encompasses everything, doesn't it? You know, this is where I want to be in 5 years, 10 years, 15, 20. If I'm, like Tammy said, just recently retired, this is what I got to live on. So what's my financial plan? Budget is a huge part of that, but recognizing your expenses is
it's like setting
sobering.
Goals, like financial goals, I guess.
Yeah, that's pretty much what we're talking about, setting financial goals. The budget is a part of that because what the budget does is that it gives you an idea where what your cash flow is. And in order to actually have to really do a wonderful job of financial planning, you should really have positive cash flow. One of the things that I always recommend to clients is that if you do a budget or if you do a cash flow analysis and you see that your net worth or that bottom line is negative, then that means that we have a little work to do. It doesn't mean that you shouldn't plan or you should get, I guess the proper word is get frazzled about it. Just understand that you have a little bit more work to do because the goal is to make that number positive.
Mm-hmm.
Because once you once it's become positive, then you have more alternatives. You can start to really invest
and take advantage of the other opportunities.
Exactly right, Tammy. You can take advantage of a lot of opportunities because that number now, it gives you a little bit more flexibility. You can reduce debt. You can put bucks away, emergency fund, invest more for retirement. You have more options.
Excellent point. You mentioned a term called net worth. Now, you know, some people psychologically might say, well, you know, my net worth is X. We're talking financial net worth. And, you know, what is financial net worth? It's your assets minus your liabilities. But I'm sure you've seen this, Freddie, Tammy as well. People will say, you know, my net worth is da-da-da-da. Well, that's because they had an inflated value of the house, which is no longer inflated. And so that positive net worth in the early stages of one's career might, in fact, be zero to negative because their assets, let's forget the house, their assets being cash in the bank and their 401k plans, a depleted value of a car, maybe some other investments and the like, minus their liabilities, debt, credit card, mortgage, etc. So the difference between, again, one's total assets and one's total liability is called net worth. And for prior to the last couple years, people were walking around saying, oh, I'm worth a lot of money. Why? Because their house had gone up, their mortgage stayed the same, and so it created this it was truly a net worth at the time, but it wasn't necessarily a spendable net worth, but they spent it anyway. I can afford, like you say, I deserve that car. Mm-hmm. I deserve to go on this trip because look at the value of my home. Well, can't say that today.
When you're setting goals, I guess it's also helpful if you have some tools to use to figure out, you know, where do I want to be or how do I get there? And I know one thing on TSP's website, tsp.gov, you can click on planning and tools, and they have the ballpark estimator. They have the TSP calculators that help you project your account balance. So there's retirement planning tools available. I would imagine there's also tools to help people who are in debt, need debt reduction, or maybe budget analysis, that type of thing. So besides hiring a financial planner, are there other places people can go to learn how to do this and how to set these goals?
Well, there are a number of sites that one can go to. One of the sites that I like to use is the FICO site.
Is that myfico.com?
Myfico.com. It talks about helping you to get out of debt. It talks about different ways to reduce your debt. It also talks about credit. Credit scores.
And, you know, FICO is a credit score agency, if you will, right?
Yes. And I apologize for using the vernacular, but FICO stands for Fair Isaac Corporation.
Yeah.
And it's the organization that provides credit scoring for the three credit bureaus.
And you want to score high there.
Of course
you
do.
And it's hard to score high there. And it's very easy to score low.
Well,
when you sign up for your free credit score, they also ask you if you want to subscribe to a recurring notification about that. Do you recommend people have that recurring notification come throughout the year or just check it once a year and make sure you're on track?
Well, actually, what I generally recommend is that you just check it yourself. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, the paying for the service is sort of, you know, top of the line. If you feel that you're having difficulty and you need that type of service, then sure, go ahead and do it, but understand that it comes with a cost. Mm-hmm. But basically, you can really do it yourself because each of the organizations provide you with a free credit report once a year.
And if you do it
at different times, then really it equates to three different credit reports.
Oh, I see what you're saying. So you might do the one agency beginning of the year and then go to the other credit reporting company the middle of the year
and then hit the other one at the end of the year.
Right. Oh.
Freddie, you said something earlier, and this plays into these credit scores. You mentioned somebody with an awful lot of credit cards. Now, that same person with an awful lot of credit cards that maybe they didn't use much is going to have a lower credit score if they throw those credit cards away. Because if I'm not mistaken, when they do these scores, it's one's ability to spend, not necessarily did they spend. So if they have all these credit cards, they could go up to the credit max, and that will lower their score some. Same person, didn't use the cards, just had a bunch of them. But the rating services
credit.
Know that you have those credit cards,
right.
And they know what the maximums are.
Well, it could or it could not. It sort of depends, because one of the things that plays into the credit score really is the payment history. And basically, there are five factors that are considered in your credit score: payment history, length of credit, the type of credit, and the amounts owed. So even if you have a lot of credit cards, but you don't have large balances on those credit cards, the fact that you have them, but the balances are low, could actually increase your score. Mm-hmm. Now, on the other hand, if you have a lot of credit cards and the balances are pretty high, it's going to reduce your credit score. So it can work for you, and then it can work against you.
Yep. You got to watch that credit card one way or the other.
Yeah, and even if, let's say, you charge a lot, but you pay it off at the end of each month, it could be for business reasons, and they have some credit cards that are just for businesses, but it's a business will spend more money than an individual because they're using the credit card as a way to maximize their return on their cash flow. I'm getting way out there with that stuff. Sorry, people.
Nope.
Let me come back to reality. Sorry.
No, but you do make a good point, because quite often what you find is that people will use credit cards for business reasons and for a lot of different things, because one of the things that I find with credit card companies is that they do a good job of keeping records for you. I mean, quite often if we're using cash, then it's up to us to maintain those records of what we spent the cash on and whether or not it was a business expense or a personal expense. But as a credit card company will actually do that for you.
It's a good organizational tool.
They will actually provide the various categories and provide you with a visual history of what you spent your money on during the course of the year.
Makes it easier to return things, too.
That's true, too.
I'm going to bring you, we got two CPAs here, and we got a closet financial planner. Tammy is the closet financial planner, and Freddie and I are the CPAs.
It's just that benefits and financial planning and taxes all tend to overlap, because I know I usually speak on the first day of the seminar, and I do benefits, and we talk about the civil service retirement, the FERS, and Social Security and insurance, but it always tends to veer off into a financial planning question towards the end of that talk, which is perfect, because then the next day Bob or Freddie will come in and talk about finances and taxes, which will solve the problem of those leftover questions. So there is a big relationship between the two.
And I think what you do in your GovExec articles, 5 years now, Tammy?
5 years.
And Tammy it was probably going to go up on the web, I guess, in a week or so. You did an index for all 5 years.
Yeah, Friday. Yeah, the GovExec.com is my where you'll find the column I write on a weekly basis. And this week, as I've done every year since since the second year I did this, is I do an index of everything that's still relevant, and now going back 5 years. So there's quite a catalog of articles on various topics related to retirement planning and benefits.
And for those of you that haven't read her articles, they're very, one, they're very educational, but two, even within just explaining, like during the open season, you wrote some great articles and the different Medicare choices. But there was a financial planning vein in there that was huge. You know, if you go from here to here, you'll get the same coverage basically, but you'll put more money in your pocket again. This is after tax.
That's right.
So there's a really nice parallel to that. And that's why she calls herself, she doesn't say it to many people, but now she said it to the world. She's a closet financial planner, but she...
Bob, I'm shocked. I didn't realize she wasn't a financial planner. But I get to read her articles, and they're really fascinating.
Well, I mean, learned a lot from people like Freddie and Bob that have that area of expertise. But the other thing with the column, I think what makes it successful is that I have an editor. So what I write, you know, he condenses, you know, 5 pages of blogging down to one concise page of good information. So I am proud of it, and I think it's a good place to get some information, basic information to start your retirement planning.
All right. And how would one get to that?
It's just a website, www.govexec, government executive, or govexec.com. And on the right-hand column, it'll say retirement planning. And if you click on that, that's where you'll find my column.
And you can sign up for that, and there's no charge.
No charge.
And
you can have it delivered to you every Friday.
Yeah.
And also you can link to it from our website, nitpinc.com, nitpinc.com.
Okay. That's right. Okay, Freddie, it's your turn. How does somebody get in touch with you?
Oh, it's very easy, Bob. I can be reached at 301 346-7393, or my email address is fhcookcpa@verizon.net.
Can you do that slow for me, please?
One more time.
Yes.
So people get their pencil and paper.
I can be reached at 301-346-7393 or via email fhcookcpa@verizon.net.
That's Cook without an E.
It's Cook without an E. I'm just a plain cook.
He's cooking today. Ooh. All righty. So
Freddie kind of picks up where benefits leave off, because I'll get people and they'll say, can I hire you? And I'm like, I don't think you really want to hire me, because the information I provide is information that should be available at your agency. Because we talk about the calculation of the civil service benefit, you know, how to get your money out of the TSP, that kind of thing, which is not financial planning. It's just knowing how the system works. But I think what people really want to know is, you know, when I do take my money out of the TSP, you know, should I take it out directly from the thrift, or should I keep allocating it to the CF and the G fund and all of those types of things? And those become financial planning questions. And that's where they might want to engage the services of someone like Freddie, who would be a financial planner to help them choose the best options to make their money last a lifetime and create enough income to support their lifestyle in retirement. So I think there is a distinct definition between benefits, which is done free of charge at your agency. Some agencies do a better job of it than others, depending on the experience of your counselor. But then from there, you still need to do the financial planning piece. And I know one of our financial planners always says, you know, your first financial planner is you, because you know what you have coming in and you know what's going out. But if you need help with figuring out how to manage that, that's where someone with a profession comes in handy.
That's absolutely correct, Tammy. And what we try to do is we try to listen to the individual to try to find out what it is, or what your goals are. And based upon those goals, try to make recommendations that will be appropriate to the individual and to their various risk tolerances.
Right.
And what their objectives are.
And looking at one's beginning career, let's just march through this beginning, mid, and retirement or pre-retirement. At the beginning, I don't think I was any different than anyone else, even though I was an accountant type. You know, retirement, that's 40 years away. And, you know, I want to go out and enjoy life a little bit. Then I'll get serious later. And I've read studies as I got older and wiser that I should have done something different earlier in life, that if you miss that sweet spot of the first 5 or 10 years, the amount of money that you have to save to make up for that is staggering. Than if you just kind of waded in the water, you know, just don't. I don't want to jump in the water. I don't need to jump in the water. I got 40 years to do it. But that 10 years, even modest, and it gets you also into a rhythm. Because if you get into the other rhythm, where you're not saving and you're spending, it's very hard to
start.
And mid-career folks, they have other issues. Everybody isn't married. Everybody doesn't have kids, but probably more so do than don't. They have expenses that they didn't really anticipate 10 years earlier, and it's very hard for them to save. So, and then, as Tammy mentioned, very popular time to retire, December, end of December for the FERS folks, or in this year it was also for the CSRSers. But if we're coming into next year, any day is good, but there are the best. Tammy, actually, we were going to stroke Tammy again. She writes this great article, but she writes it well before the end of the year about the best dates in the coming year to retire. And in that same article, she talks about the best dates in the year not to retire if you're under the old adage, first 3 days or whatever. And I think you did that in July 2010, about 2011. So people had a lot of time to read. And I like what you did in it. You took a calendar, like 12 squares, and in yellow at the end of a month, said, watch out first, people, or the beginning.
And I try to give reasons behind why one date is better than another, because you could really retire any day you want. You want to pick your birthday or your anniversary, that's fine. But for benefit purposes, there are some reasons why you want to pick the last day of the month, or if you're CSRS, maybe one of the first 3 days of the month, because of the way your benefits are calculated and the way your service is accumulated. So those are things you want to understand so that you can choose a good date for yourself when it's time to plan that. And you want to plan that at least a year in advance, so you can start planning out your leave usage and your sick leave and getting that final calculation and start to fill out the paperwork so you can be on track and on schedule for when the day actually arrives.
But then sometimes, Tammy, you start looking at those things, and before you know it, you start saying, okay, well, if I retired on this date, I would maximize. Right. And before you know it, you wind up not retiring.
That's right, because you say, wait a second, if I work another month, that would be another 1/12 of 2%, another month at my high 3.
What's wrong with that?
Yeah, and then you end up with 64 years of service.
But at least you maximize that retirement.
You max it out. You might die the day after, but you got your full retirement.
Yeah, probably the day you retire, Tammy, is the day I retire. So, yeah.
Well, get ready. Start planning.
Uh-oh. Anyway, so, Freddie, let's now, we did some beginning career, we did some mid-career, and pre-retirement, that's the bulk of our work, although we're adding more and more mid-career and beginning career as time goes on, so the mix has really changed drastically as a percentage of what we do. But the pre-retirement folks, or just retired, I don't care how great the TSP website is and how great the show is on occasion when we talk about the TSP. People just don't understand their distribution options. I think they understand their investment options. I'm not so sure they always understand time value of money and compounding. Mm-hmm. But they understand where their money is.
And risk tolerance, too, because I think a lot of people are afraid of the CS&EI funds because there is risk associated with them. But yet sometimes risk is necessary in achieving your goals.
That's absolutely correct. And one of the things that I have discussed with a number of clients over last couple of months, actually goes back maybe a year or so, it's use of the L funds. Mm-hmm. I think what happens is that people were afraid of the L funds because they didn't quite understand that basically the L funds, the life cycle funds, really, you know, takes a little bit of the guesswork out of it.
Yep.
If for instance, if you are planning to retire in 2035, for instance, use of the L 2040 fund would be a great option for you, because what it does is that it provides you with a sort of an active allocation, and the Thrift Retirement Board would actually do the analysis for you, and they will actually provide you with the various allocations, and over time it will work for your benefit.
Yeah, it starts off more risky and becomes more conservative as you get closer to reaching
closer
that goal.
Retirement.
And they constantly, I think the technical term is what? What do they call it?
They reallocate every day,
and they rebalance every 3 months.
Now, for the rest of us, it's reshuffling the deck, right? So, but it's stacked in our favor.
That's correct. And what it, you know, and the reason I say to look at that as an option. Now, I'm not saying that's the best option for you because there's still risk involved. But if you're the type of person that will allow yourself to take some risk, then that would be a great option. But if you feel that it's too risky, because really what you should do is look at the amount of risk involved in that particular portfolio. And if you find that that's still too risky for you, then look at some of the others. I mean, if you went down to the L2010 fund just went out of existence, December 31. But if you took a look at the L2020 fund, the L2030 fund, those are a little bit less conservative. I'm sorry, more conservative. Mm-hmm. And they might be better for you.
You might want to choose a mix of two. You could put 50% of your money in the L2020 and then the other 50% in the L2030. It'll kind of give you an in-between the two.
That's correct.
You're not restricted to one of the funds. You can do combinations.
That's absolutely correct. Or you could, if you want to be even more conservative, you could take the L20, put 50% in the L2010 in the L2020 fund, and then the other 50 in the G fund. So,
yeah,
I mean, there are all kinds
of
options.
A lot of people do that. They like to hedge their bets with that G fund.
Right.
Like,
so,
there's still almost 1 out of 4 accounts that are 100% G fund, which is a little bit scary, especially if those are FERS employees.
That's absolutely correct. Yeah. But for some reason, I find that there are people that are just that conservative.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe they don't understand what being that conservative actually means in the long run.
It might mean they have to work longer.
Well, that's exactly what it's going to mean.
Yeah.
Because you aren't getting the rate of growth that you're going to need to keep up with inflation over time.
I've worked with I'm not a financial planner, Freddie. And Tammy, you of course know that. But I understand it. And I'll talk to these phobic about going outside of it. I said, listen, first time you ever jumped in the water in a pool or jumped off a diving board, you went in the low end first. Put your foot in the water. Put it in the C fund. C fund is Is it risky in the scary sense? No. Is it as safe as the sea? No, with the exception of it ignores inflation. So, yeah, 2 years ago, we got hammered. 2 years later, it's back to where it was. So put 10% of your money in, 5%. Just see how it goes. And if you like, go in the deeper end and go in the two-foot end.
And when it went down in 2008, that was kind of the time to be buying it because it was at a very low cost and you can sock your money in there and buy more shares of it. So it's almost like when something's on sale, you want to buy more of those things. Like when Coke goes on sale at the grocery store, we stock up. That's not when we get rid of all of our Coke. That's when we buy it.
Yeah, there was
so, same thing with the stock market.
Well, it was the meltdown. You are too young to remember this, but the meltdown in, what was it, 87, where they had the 600-point drop and it was like people were jumping out off the roofs. And I had a client call.
I remember. Not too young.
This might have told me about it.
Yeah. Tammy told you about it, right? Just before the show. Anyway, so this person calls up and says, I'm going in the market today. And I say, are you crazy? And no, I was crazy. Because
exactly.
The rates of return on what this person got after, and they didn't put their life savings into it, but they put a chunk of change. Mm-hmm. And what a great move. One of the local states, the comptroller, pulled all the state pension money out right before the crash now and then jumped back in afterwards.
I think for the average investor, though, trying to time the market, you can't do it. But you got to set a plan and set a strategy for getting to where you want to be. And sometimes it does mean you're more conservative. And other people might be willing to take a little more risk.
Right. But, the thing about it, and this is where the discipline comes in. I mean, once you decide that you're going to have that strategy, you got to continue with the strategy, whether the market is up or down.
Right. You can't get scared and run away.
You can't back out of it just because the market is down.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, as we all know, the only way to make money in this business is to buy low and sell high. I mean, that's it in a nutshell. And if you do anything other than that, you're going to lose money.
Yeah. Right.
And typically what people have a tendency to do is they will jump in when the market is up. Yeah. And then get out when the market goes down. And that's a true recipe for disaster.
Yeah. Right.
They call that the yo-yo effect. But the other one, I think I like what you were talking about. I think the buzzword is dollar cost averaging, where you buy something today and it goes down, but tomorrow you're putting a like in investment in, like in the TSP, and you're buying at a lower price. So the average is on the norm great. Is that what you call it, dollar cost
averaging?
That's
exactly what it's called, dollar cost averaging. Mm-hmm. And it works over time because what it does is that it smooths out those highs and lows.
Mm-hmm. Makes it so you don't have to make those kind of risky decisions.
Yeah, you can't. I learned a long time ago, a while ago. If the market opened at 9:30, you buy the stock, and if it doesn't triple by 10, you sell it for 50% less than what you bought it for at 9:30. I'm not allowed to play in the market by myself anymore. My wife has told me, don't you dare do that again. Anyway, so.
Yeah, that type of investing can be just the same as going to Las Vegas, I guess.
Yeah, and a whole lot
that's
less
fun. That's not what we're talking about for retirement planning.
Yeah, that's not a real true plan there. Even though we find that quite a few retirees wind up going to places like Atlantic City and Las Vegas.
That's right. They got more time to do it.
But typically they're doing it as recreation, not as a way to supplement their retirement.
Let's hope not,
yeah. Okay. Freddie, one of your bullet points here is, some people might be listening or they know somebody that's just in rough shape financially. And I like your bullet point, deal with the present or bleak future. In other words, deal with it. So what's the first step in dealing with it, other than you already know you're underwater? But how do you get to the top?
Well, one of the things you have to do is come to the realization. You have to want to get to where, to meet that objective. You have to say to yourself, look, I'm having a problem now, but there's only one way for me to overcome it. And that's to just sit down and work out a plan and decide that I'm going to do the things that are necessary to get me to where I want to be. And, I mentioned earlier about the part-time job and that's something that you might have to consider.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, what we have a tendency to do when it comes to debt is to try to hide, thinking that, if we don't deal with it, then it's going to go away.
I don't think we want to give up anything to get out of debt. So I think you have to make some hard decisions to sometimes either make the decision to get more money coming in or reduce the amount that you're spending or get rid of some of the stuff that costs money to maintain. And those are all hard things for people to do.
And, exactly.
And ignoring it is like ignoring the weeds on the lawn. You ignore those, they'll take over the lawn.
They'll take over.
And it gets to that compounding in the worst way. It compounds up because it's at such a high. So you gotta extinguish it somehow or just chip away at it.
Exactly. And one of the things that quite often people have a reluctancy is to contact their creditors. And by contacting the creditors, you might find that they might be willing to work with you by allowing you a methodology, a payment plan, something that will eventually get you out of your situation. They might even be interested in reducing the interest rate. They could modify the loan. I mean, there are a number of things that could be done.
It's an outstanding point because I think most people think the credit, the people that issue you the credit want you in debt. They don't want you in debt to go bankrupt because they don't collect anything.
That's exactly right. They're sort of a double-edged sword. They do want you in debt because they're going to make money, if you're in debt, but they want you to pay it off.
Yes.
Because if you don't pay it off, it doesn't do them any good.
Mm-hmm.
And you hit a good point. If you go bankrupt, then they get nothing. So they're there to work with you, even if it means taking a little bit less.
Yeah.
Sometimes
I mean, some income is better than no income.
And I see some of these TV shows where they take it a step further, haggle about everything. So I don't think you can haggle at a grocery store too easily, but certainly with a bigger purchase, whether it's clothes or TV, only if you need it, or a car, only if you need it. In today's environment, they're more receptive to listening to that than before. But I really like your idea of going to the credit card company. Listen, I'm in tough shape. Can we shave some interest off of this? And maybe I'll pay $50 more a month. Maybe I'll pay $100 more a month, and we'll both benefit.
Right.
That's a great idea.
That's always an option. I mean, sometimes they'll work with you. Sometimes they won't. Yeah. I mean, but you never know until you try.
What's the worst they can say is no?
No.
That's right.
It's like dating, right? You ask enough, somebody will say yes. All right. Sorry. Off to Never Never Land. So balance sheet. We did the balance sheet. The miracle of compounding. John Elliott comes in when Tammy doesn't, and he always talks about the miracle of compounding, which I don't know if Einstein is it an Einstein credited comment, but
I thought it was Ben Franklin, wasn't it?
Yeah,
it was years ago.
Okay, but that you set a dollar aside and it grows whatever interest rate or whatever growth rate of return it has, if it's in the market, then it compounds, and if it can compound in a tax deferred environment, you lose potentially the capital gains, but that might be well offset by the ability for that money to continue to grow untaxed. So it's almost like a mortgage. People look at mortgages and they multiply their monthly payment times 360 and you go, that's three times the principal. Yeah, and because it's the miracle of compounding in the reverse. So I just wanted to throw that out. People look at, what's $50 a month? What's $100 a month? Well, over a number of years, it's a lot.
It was Einstein.
Was it Einstein? Oh, yeah. Wow. Okay. Yeah. Well, I remember Ben Franklin said something about a penny earned.
That's
so I'm
right.
I thought maybe he was talking about compounding.
It's amazing what Google will tell you.
You don't need Google.
Well, as your memories get shorter, I think you do.
See, I remember when Ben Franklin said whatever he said, and then Einstein was a young kid at the time.
Right.
I remember it well.
Okay.
Anyway.
But
so,
Google is a good place if you're looking for information on retirement planning, financial planning, because if you're looking for, let's say, a retirement calculator, you can Google in there civil service or FERS retirement calculator, and you'll come up with two or three that are pretty decent calculators to help you plug in your numbers and get some estimates of what you're entitled to. So that's another place to start in using tools for setting goals and managing your money.
Well, OPM's got a pretty nifty site now. Is that function up yet? Because I can't imagine the program that could handle all the, what are there, 160 different retirement systems within the federal sector?
Well, a lot of different variations.
I shouldn't say different, but variations thereof. So the program for that just must be enormous.
Well, the calculator used by the agencies is not very user-friendly. So it's something that you can go to your agency's benefits office and have them compute your retirement for you, which everybody should do that. when they're within 5 years, 3 years of becoming eligible to retire. And I say the main reason to do that is not so much to find out how much you're going to get, but to make sure that everything in your personnel history is in order, make sure there's nothing missing, make sure that you don't owe any money to the retirement fund. You'll find out a lot of information by requesting that retirement estimate that's done by your agency's benefits specialist.
Freddie, would you recommend somebody mid-career do this?
I would say you might want to do it as soon as possible, probably even before mid-year. One of the things that I like to tell people that are just getting into federal service is that if you start putting it away now, then you know it will just, you mentioned compounding. Well, it would definitely compound, mm-hmm. but you want to check your personnel file as often as possible.
Absolutely. And we're turning into this electronic personnel file, but even there you can find mistakes or things missing, errors in your service history, and that's what gives you the retirement that you've earned.
Exactly.
So you want to make sure those records are up to date and current.
And particularly if you know, like I did, I worked in federal government for a number of years, and I changed agencies quite frequently. So you want to make certain that that information follows you from agency to agency, and that is correct.
Yeah, I remember when my friend's husband passed away, he was a federal employee, and her widow's benefit was held up for 15 months because they were missing 15 years of his service from one of the agencies he had worked for prior to his last agency. And so they wouldn't pay her full survivor benefit until they found those missing records.
Wow.
So that's why I think it is important, even mid-career, beginning career, to make sure that your personnel history in your official personnel folder reflects all the service that you've performed up to that point. Is the agency you currently work for is the agency that's going to maintain those records for you. So they should have gathered those from your prior agencies, right. From your military service, and that should all be up to date and current.
Right. And if it's not there, you want to know about it so that you can do
work
something.
Work on fixing it.
Work on fixing it. That's correct.
Yeah, I get an email, seems once a week, from OPM, Ray Kirk's office, and it's about retirement and
retirement readiness.
And mm-hmm. of course, I'm not a Fed, but they're nice enough to include me. And I go in there and go, oh, I learned something today. And that's relatively new, I would say, within the last year. And it's really a nice
OPM
reminder.
OPM and TSP are both using an initiative to try and further expand employees' knowledge of financial planning for their own good, because it is an important thing you have to now do. I know when I came into federal service back in 1980, no one said, make sure you put aside 10% of your pay for retirement. They just said, make sure you work 30 years. But today,
exactly.
You got to put away money for your future.
That's right, because at least you want to put the 5% away to get the agency match.
Okay, so. Freddie, we're getting the hook.
We're getting the hook.
Final
so
comments?
Soon?
It was such a good time, but we're getting the fast hook here. Final comments to either one of you?
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Have a great 2011.
And listen to next week, because it's all on taxes. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP. Please tune in next Monday at 10 a.m. for a topic solely devoted to you, the federal employee. The show can also be heard 24/7 on federalnewsradio.com. Thanks for listening.
Human Capital Management for Defense is a highly anticipated training conference with more than 300 delegates and key speakers from Army, Navy, Air Force.